On Radio Jackie this morning, I'm speaking to the Lib Dem MP for Epsom and Ewell, Helen Maguire. Thanks for joining us. Well, with everything happening in the Middle East right now, how do you see the situation, both in terms of safety and the people caught up in it?
Well, look, it's really alarming to hear what's happening at the moment. I think all of us woke up on Saturday and we're really shocked and surprised to see that it was happening. And whilst we won't shed any tears for the death of the Ayatollah, it was the way that it's gone about is certainly not something that we would have expected. And obviously right now what we've seen is that as a result, Iran have retaliated and attacked a number of other countries where obviously some of our British citizens are living. But in addition to that, because of the decision of this government to actually use some of its bases, its base in Cyprus, Akrotiri, for defensive action, it's also put British personnel's lives more in danger as well. So what I've been saying is, if there's any constituents around in any of these countries, either for work or travel, please do get in contact and we'll see what support we can provide you with. We've already had a few emails this morning and we're doing what we can to provide support. Obviously, we don't know how long this is going to continue. We know that Trump said it would be 4 weeks, but with any conflicts like this, you never know exactly what's going to happen. So we will just be keeping ourselves updated with exactly what's happening on the ground hour by hour.
Having served in the military yourself, what advice would you give to politicians about getting involved in conflicts abroad?
Well, yeah, as we know, and I served in Iraq, and I served in Iraq when, the Americans went in, and quite frankly, they had no plan, and I had to deal with that, and I had to train the Iraqi police and individuals who we didn't know who they'd actually worked with previously. And I think the challenge that we have at the moment is Trump has decided to get involved in this manner, but he hasn't stated yet clearly what his goal is. He hasn't stated what his strategy is and what his plan is. At the end, is his plan for regime change? We don't know. He hasn't said on Truth Social. And if you're going to use military action, then you absolutely need a clear military strategy. We don't have that. I will be at the statement later today, and I will be asking the Foreign Secretary if President Trump has shared any particular plan with her. But it's really important that we understand what President Trump is actually aiming to achieve here.
Now, the Liberal Democrats are generally against war. In this situation, what's the alternative?
Let's just go back a second. So what we need to make sure that we do is that if any aggressive action is used, that we have a clear plan. So let me just take you back on that point slightly. Now, what we had in 2015 was a joint comprehensive plan of action that was secured under Obama. And what that did was it limited Iran's nuclear ambitions. Unfortunately, when President Trump came in 2017, he ripped that up. So that we know that diplomacy works and has worked with Iran. It seems like he went to the negotiating table. He didn't offer anything for the Iranians. He was upset and then he decided to attack Iran. That's not how you deal with other countries. That's not how diplomatic relations work. It's just, Trump throwing his toys out and, attacking Iran to try to get whatever he wants to achieve, of which we don't know yet, because he actually hasn't stated what his long term goal is.
And how can the UK support people and influence events in the region without actually sending troops?
Well, obviously, we have embassies all over the Middle East, and you will have probably heard that the Foreign Secretary today announced that they will be sending out task force to the region so they can actually support individuals there. Obviously, we have a line to the FCDO as well. So any of my constituents can contact us and we can provide what support that we can.
And how do you think the UK should respond to actions by other powers in the region like the US and Donald Trump without actually getting dragged into the conflict?
Well, I think the first question we need to ask is why has Starmer actually allowed our bases to be used for defensive action? I think that's the first question, because what that is doing is that it's potentially making British personnel targets. And we've seen that with the attack of the drone, on Akrotiri base earlier, or it was yesterday. And so that's a real question, you know. And what we're seeing at the moment is, you know, I mean, this will pan out in the next 24 hours. We don't know what the Middle Eastern powers are saying, but I think that Trump thought that in doing this, that the other Middle Eastern powers would support him. And at the moment, it doesn't seem as though they are. You know, what they want is a stable economic environment where they can trade. And, you know, anything like this causes massive instability, massive global instability. And that's not what the region wants. So we really need to think hard about actually, you know, if we do support the US, how we support the US. I'm not in agreement with the limited use of the bases at the moment. And let's see how it progresses. And obviously, we're here to hold the government to account.
Do you think the UK-US special relationship should be abandoned? And if so, what does that mean for us and Europe when the EU still heavily depends on America?
Well, I mean, this is something I've been questioning for a long time. You know, if you've listened to any of the questions or statements I've made in the House, then it's something that I've been questioning, particularly over Ukraine. And one of the challenges is that this conflict, you know, has the potential to overshadow Ukraine. You know, it's at the moment we don't see the US providing all the support that we might want it to, particularly in the negotiations on Ukraine. So, like the backstop agreement, for example, and obviously, you know, we're increasing our spending on NATO, which is absolutely the right thing to do. But there are real questions over the US and real questions over relationship, and particularly when you've got a really unpredictable president like President Trump in power, who you just don't know what he's going to do from one moment to another. And that's what we want as a country. So what you've seen at the moment is, you know, other countries, for example, like Norway, who have started to buy airplanes from other nations, not from the US, because they're getting concerned about that and they want to be in control. The challenge that the UK has is, unfortunately, that a lot of our military is interlinked with US systems, and so it makes it quite difficult for us to kind of separate too much at the moment. But I certainly think that that should be a long-term goal.
And do you think having MPs with military experience like yourself changes how these issues are debated in Parliament?
Well, I think it certainly brings a level of knowledge, experience, and understanding that not other people have. I think when you've served in conflict abroad, you really understand the consequences. You understand the really tough decisions that have to be made. And, you know, you don't take this lightly. And it's very different making these decisions, you know, in a warm office, you know, somewhere in a Western country, than actually the reality of being on the ground. And, you know, when you've seen friends injured and you know what the real life consequences are, and you see local people and how it affects their lives, then, you know, that really brings it home in terms of, you know, the importance of getting these decisions right. But more importantly, knowing why you're making these decisions, knowing what the long term aim is for your decisions, because without really understanding what the vision and the purpose is, then you can't make the right decision in the first place.
Thank you for that. Moving on to the next topic. Now, the Green Party recently won an historic parliamentary by-election in Gorton and Denton. How do you interpret the Green Party's win, and what does it signal about voter priorities nationally?
Yeah, well, it was obviously, I mean, you know, by-elections never favour the governing party. And obviously at the moment you have a huge amount of frustration against this Labour government. Many people just feel let down. They don't feel that the party particularly has a vision, or that they're sticking to the values that they feel the Labour Party should. And so it was quite clear that, you know, it was going to be, you know, either sort of, you know, Greens or Reforms who were going to win from that kind of anti-government vote. And really, it's a you know, point in time where government just needs to, you know, step up and listen, you know, and listen to reality on the ground. People aren't content and happy. And let's see if they make any changes to the kind of direction of travel that they're heading in at the moment.
Could this shift influence strategy for Liberal Democrats locally ahead of May's election?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I mean, look, we are all, you know, powering forwards to, you know, potentially win the East Surrey election on the 7th of May. We're absolutely really excited. And really, this, you know, is very exciting in East Surrey. We've got three Liberal Democrat MPs, you know, and there's a real opportunity for us here. And it's absolutely fantastic. And we've got so much support on the doorsteps. That's brilliant to hear. You know, we're doing really well here. And look, I'm just looking forward to hopefully hopefully getting a lot of other people in my team, some fantastic councillors elected who, really care passionately about their local community and residents and want to deliver for local people.
And what lessons should MPs take from this result to stay responsive to constituents' concerns, do you think?
Well, I think the key thing is, getting out on the ground, getting out on the doorsteps and understanding exactly what's going on. And that's exactly what I do every single week, out on the doorsteps, with my councillors, trying to understand the issues and concerns and addressing them where we can. We have so much casework, it's over 10,000 pieces of casework that my team has now completed now. So we're just keeping in touch. I think it's very easy to not do that. But it's really important for me that I really understand exactly what's happening on the ground. And I was delighted, for example, yesterday I was celebrating Iftar at the Islamic Centre and just talking to local Muslim people about understanding their concerns about how they feel in the community at the moment. And they were really happy to have myself and other members of the community, other councillors and members of the fire police and the ambulance service there to celebrate this with them.
Next thing I want to touch on is NHS services locally. Now, since December, what progress has been made on addressing pressures at Epsom Hospital?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that I'm disappointed with, I don't know if you heard or not, but there's a recent NAO report that came out, and unfortunately, that has highlighted that the rebuild or the building of the new hospital will be pushed back another 3 years, which is really disappointing to hear. It's clear that there are huge pressures on the hospital, and we do need the new hospital to be built. So I'll continue to put pressure on the government to provide the services that my constituents deserve. And actually, this week we have a debate in Parliament secured by one of our Liberal Democrat MPs, Bobby Dean, just from across the border on capital spending in the NHS. And I'll be raising the issue again of Epsom Hospital during this debate.
And how are local community health initiatives like Care Closer to Home helping reduce hospital demand?
Yeah, no, they're really good. So I had a meeting actually the other week about exactly this. And obviously, this is in the NHS 10-year plan, and it's really good to see. We're getting both great feedback from the hospitals and also from local residents because, let's be honest, most people would rather be at home than in hospitals. But also, the medical profession would rather people be at home in hospitals because hospitals, you don't want to be there if you don't have to, right? So if you can get the care at home, then that's the best place to be. So it's moving in the right direction. That's really good. They now have something called a virtual ward. And have a really great team of people, and I was delighted to meet many of the people who serve and support the patients in the constituency, and that's really good.
Next topic, antisocial behaviour and community safety. Now, you have recently highlighted the antisocial behaviour pledge in Epsom and Ewell. What tangible impact has the pledge had so far in the borough?
Yeah, so I mean, it was good to see that Epsom and Ewell Borough Council obviously renewed the pledge, and that's obviously highlighting the importance of the issue locally. It's something I raise on a continual basis. And in fact, just yesterday, I was talking to the police officer about this, and because I'm out frequently on the doorsteps, obviously hearing all the different issues. So one of the things that's happening is obviously when issues are reported, then it does mean that police officers can actually go to the relevant places and hopefully resolve issues quickly. And I do urge people to please use the Surrey Police Facebook page to report incidents immediately because it does give police officers obviously a good steer as to where they need to be. So I'll keep on. It's an area that I'll keep on working on, and I was delighted that also secured the win for pavement parking earlier in the year. So that's some new legislation that will be introduced later this year, which will give councils powers to prevent pavement parking in different areas should they wish to do so.
And are local police, councils, and community groups adequately resourced to tackle these persistent issues?
Well, this is a real challenge, and obviously, we think that the police has been underfunded, and we'd like to see more community police officers. And in fact, I've just written a letter to our Surrey Police and Crime Commissioner because at the moment they are spending more, but more importantly, she's spending more on her personal office, which I don't think is the right thing to do, particularly because the Police and Crime Commissioner will be abolished soon, and I'd like to see that funding to actually go to police officers on. on the ground who are actually doing the really important work of stopping things like antisocial behaviour.
And are there any further steps that you think could make residents feel safer in their neighbourhoods?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I did earlier in the year was I had a roundtable on e-scooters. We know that e-scooters and e-bikes are an issue in the area. And one of the things that we raised was about the sale of these. Now, obviously, we do know that some e-bikes are legal, but what's happening is it's very easy to buy illegal components and people kind of put them on their bikes and soup them up, etc. And so we need to stop the importing of this. So we started to talk about that. And also, we had an interesting conversation with some police in Derbyshire who were talking about the different ways that they were actually stopping individuals on e-bikes and e-scooters. So I've been sharing that with Surrey Police, and we'll see if they implement any of the same measures or not.
Moving on to the next topic. Now, you hosted Sir Ed Davey in Epsom to discuss national and local issues. What were the key takeaways from Ed Davey's visit?
Yeah, so Ed Davey came to Epsom to launch the East Surrey campaign. So that was absolutely fantastic. And as I mentioned, we are really hopeful that we could take control of East Surrey moving forward. Look, I'm out on the doorstep all the time, and there are so many issues I'm hearing on a regular basis. Potholes comes up on a regular basis. Also, special educational needs, and I have a number of constituents who contact me who simply can't get the support that they need for their children. And we have a number of stories of individuals where social care hours have been reduced. So these are really important issues that should we get into should we take overall control of East Surrey Council, then we'll obviously focus on it and deliver for constituents.
And what role should MPs and councils play in implementing these initiatives locally, do you think?
Well, we work together as a team. I mean, that's what we do at the moment. And so there are some issues that are, that you can implement locally and some nationally. So if we look at, say, for example, pavement parking, there's national legislation that needs to happen there. It's also locally because the traffic management currently, or the traffic enforcement, is managed by Surrey County Council, and then also you have the police in that. So actually, on many of these issues, we need to work across the different layers of government to make sure that we get the best outcome for constituents.
Now, Epsom and Yule has backed the End Poverty Pledge and Continues Household Support Fund programmes. Now, how are residents being made aware of these support schemes, and are there still gaps that need attention?
Yes, so obviously ending poverty is an absolute priority, as it should be for every politician. And I have regular meetings with the Good Company, and I hosted a cost of living table recently to understand obviously what's going on. I'm in constant contact with various charities. Citizens Advice Bureau are obviously at the front line of helping constituents as well to understand what the different challenges are, and we'll continue to provide the support that we can and signpost them. So I have a regular newsletter that goes out on a monthly basis, and if there are any areas of support that I can highlight, I always put them in there as well. And obviously, if anyone contacts my office, then we do signpost them to the areas where they can gain support, and we often help them get that support that they need as well.
And how do you see charities and local councils working together to tackle poverty in Epsom and Yule?
Well, this happens already, whether it's from Citizens Advice to the Good Company to the Food Bank, we already work together. So, there's a charity, for example, that can provide, furniture when people move into, social housing accommodation. So it's something that's already happening, and I think we have a really good charity sector. We're really lucky that we have that in Epsom and Yule, and I'll continue to grow and develop that relationship.
On the final topic, local government reform and May 2026 elections. Now, Surrey is moving to two unitary councils ahead of local elections. With these changes, how will Epsom and Yule residents' voices continue to be heard?
Yes, so they'll continue to be heard in just a different format. So obviously they will be in East Surrey. They will each division will have two councillors, and so every resident, obviously, if they have a concern or issue, then they will be able to contact the councillor and obviously raise that particular issue.
And how are you helping constituents understand the new council structure and election process?
Well, we've been putting out leaflets for months now, explaining exactly what's going on and the new process. And then obviously we're out on the doors all the time explaining exactly what's going on. Obviously, it's a confusing picture for many people, but we're doing our best to get our message out there.
And final question, what are the main risks or benefits of this reorganisation for local democracy and services?
Well, look, it's a real challenge. I mean, fundamentally, it wasn't something that we agreed with. I think this Labour government thinks that there will be some cost saving as a result of that. I'm not entirely sure that will happen or not. And we've seen examples of other unitarisation that's happened throughout the country, and they haven't demonstrated that there'll be savings. So we'll see what happens there. I do think it might be helpful in terms of not having, two different councils when you have, as I mentioned before, many issues that cross different levels of council. So that's quite helpful. Helpful. So it might simplify some things. So there'll be, there'll be some things that work better. There'll be challenges in other area. And fundamentally, this is it's a new journey for all of us. But we will definitely, I'm sure whoever takes control, and hopefully it's the Liberal Democrats, but we will definitely be looking to other unitary authorities to try to understand, best practice.